You know, in the tech world, we are obsessed with this term full stack.
Oh, yeah, it's everywhere.
And usually you hear that at a networking event or you see it on a resume, and it just means someone who knows a bit of database code and can also make a website look pretty.
Right. It's strictly digital.
It's code talking to code.
Exactly. The front end and the back end.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's all just happening inside a screen. It's abstract.
Exactly. But what if full stack meant something, well, literal, like the actual stack of a civilization?
Okay.
I'm talking about the dirt the building sits on, the electrons flowing through the copper, the server blades crunching the data, the bank account,
Or profit.
and even the laws that govern the whole thing.
That is a massive shift in scope. I mean, you are moving from building an app to building a town.
That is precisely where we are going today. We are doing a deep dive into a certification that claims to teach you how to, well, blueprint the future from scratch. It's called the Sovereign Systems Architect, or SSA. It's coming out of the DeRoticular Academy. And frankly, looking through the syllabus for this, it feels less like a tech course and more like the training manual for a Bond villain's lead engineer.
Or maybe the founder of a new city-state.
Right.
Or a doomsday prepper who decided to go corporate and, file for an IPO. It really is a fascinating document.
It is. We've looked at DeRoticular stuff before we covered the CRA, which is the digital admin side.
And the SPT, the hardcore power generation side.
But this is the capstone.
It is. The SSA is the masterclass. And the whole premise here is that if you want to build what they call a sovereign stack, this self-sustaining, independent node of civilization, you can't just be a plumber.
And you can't just be a coder.
You have to synthesize. The course slogan actually got stuck in my head. It's architects do not just tighten bolts or configure firewalls, they design the civilization.
Because I'm the civilization. That's a heavy promise for, what, a 30-hour course?
It's a huge promise. But when you look at how they break it down, they're phrasing this role as wearing three distinct hats at the same time.
And these are three hats that do not usually fit on the same head.
Not at all. You have to be the civil engineer,
Okay.
the investment banker,
Right.
and the town mayor all at once.
So let's unpack this curriculum hat by hat. Because if you're listening to this and you're thinking about how fragile the current grid is, this is essentially the instruction manual for opting out.
Or at least backing it up.
Yeah, backing it up. Let's start with that first hat, the civil engineer.
Okay, so this is primarily Module 1, the physics of integration. And the first thing that really jumps out from the material is this concept they call the Velcro principle.
I loved this metaphor because usually when we think about IT and power, we think of them as, I don't know,
Or at
enemies.
least different departments that hate each other.
Yes.
Exactly. In a normal data center, power creates heat. Heat kills servers. So you spend millions of dollars and just massive amounts of energy fighting that heat.
Air conditioning, huge fans.
Liquid nitrogen in some extreme cases,
Yeah.
you are literally paying to destroy energy. You're fighting physics.
And a Velcro principle says, stop fighting it.
Stick them together.
Just stick them
It's
together.
all about what they call thermodynamic symbiosis. The syllabus makes this one really specific point that I think changes how you look at infrastructure. It says waste heat is just misplaced energy.
Misplaced energy. I like that.
So if you are running a RYOS CC1000 compute cluster, which for context is a serious piece of industrial hardware, that thing is putting out a tremendous amount of thermal energy.
Right.
The SSA is trained to design liquid cooling loops that don't just, dissipate that heat into the sky. They transport it
Transport it where?
to something that's hungry for heat. So in the DeRoticular model, they usually pair the server rack directly with the Agri unit. That's the biomass generator.
And you use the server heat to what, pre-dry the feedstock?
You got it.
Because wet biomass burns poorly.
Yeah.
If you're throwing wet wood chips or damp corn husks into a gasifier, your efficiency just tanks.
Correct. So the servers dry the fuel for the generator, or in another configuration they talk about, that heat goes into a community greenhouse loop.
Okay, this was the circular input loop diagram in the storyboard, and it's really elegant when you trace the path.
It is.
You've got the greenhouse growing, say, tomatoes, the waste, the stalks, the husks, the bad produce, that all goes into the agri unit.
The Agri unit gasifies that waste to create electricity.
The electricity powers the Rios servers.
And the Rios servers run the farm management software. and the AI that optimizes the greenhouse.
To grow more tomatoes, it's a closed loop.
Completely closed.
Waste becomes power, power becomes data, data grows food. It feels more like an ecosystem than a machine.
But the architect level isn't just drawing that circle on a whiteboard. The syllabus really emphasizes the math. You're calculating precise wattage draws against generator output curves. Mm-hmm. You have to know that if the servers spike in CPU usage, like running a heavy AI training model, the heat output goes up.
And can the greenhouse loop actually handle that thermal load?
Exactly. Or will you boil the roots of your tomatoes? You might need a dump radiator as a failsafe. That's the engineering reality of it.
It's balancing an equation where the variables are temperature, watts, and vegetables.
Okay.
But let's say you get the physics right. The system is humming.
Right.
That leads us to the second hat, which I think is the most intimidating part of this whole stack, the investment banker.
Module 3, sovereign economics.
Because it's not enough for the machine to just run. It has to pay for itself. And there is a term in here that I had not seen applied to a microgrid before. The spark spread.
Yeah, this is a term straight out of energy trading desks, you know, places like Enron or Goldman Sachs. In the macro world, the spark spread is the theoretical profit of buying fuel, burning it, and selling the electricity.
But for the SSA, it's different.
It's a moment-to-moment algorithmic decision.
And this is where the complexity just spikes. Because in a sovereign stack, you aren't just a utility company selling power to the grid. You have options. You have a portfolio.
You have a decision matrix. Let's use a practical scenario to make this concrete. It's 2 p.m. on a sunny Tuesday. Your agri unit is producing syngas.
Okay, synthetic gas from the waste.
Right. You have three choices. Choice A. You burn the gas to generate electricity. But then, what do you do with those electrons?
Well, you could mine cryptocurrency. That's usually the baseline, right?
Right. That's the heat sink for value. If you have no other customers, you just mine crypto. But maybe the crypto market is down. So instead, you use that power to sell cloud compute capacity.
To a client who needs to render a 3D movie or something.
Or train a neural net. So the architect has to know the spot price of Bitcoin and the spot price of cloud compute.
Wow.
But then there's choice B. You don't burn the gas. You run it through a Fischer-Tropsch process, which converts that gas into liquid diesel.
Liquid fuel, like physical barrels of diesel.
Yes. And maybe there's a local shortage because the supply chain is backed up. Or maybe it's harvest season and the local farmers are desperate for fuel.
So the most profitable move might be to make diesel and sell it physically.
At that specific moment, yes. And then there's choice C.
Storage.
Storage. You generate the electrons, but you just shove them into the battery array because your predictive model says the price of energy is going to triple at 6 p.m. when the sun goes down.
So the spark spread is the arbitrage between those three buckets.
And you can't calculate that with a pen and paper while you're shoveling wood chicks. The syllabus introduces a tool called the Sovereign Arbiter.
Okay.
It's a proprietary, heavy-duty Excel macro tool that's included in the course. It helps you model all these inputs, feedstock cost, crypto difficulty, diesel prices, kilowatt demand, to find the optimal path.
It sounds intense, but the goal is what they call the digital flywheel. I really liked this concept.
The reinvestment part.
Yeah, it's not just about making a profit. It's about where that profit goes to speed the whole system up.
Right, the flywheel effect. The strategy is this. You take those early profits, maybe from selling the diesel or the carbon credits, and you don't just pocket it.
You reinvest it.
Specifically into upgrading your network latency.
Why latency? Why is speed the priority over, say, more solar panels?
Because in the digital economy, latency is a premium product. If you can lower your ping, you can attract higher tier digital clients. We're talking high-frequency traders, ISP peering agreements, real-time gaming hosts.
And those clients pay a lot more per kilowatt hour of compute than a crypto rig does.
Significantly more. So better latency brings more revenue. More revenue lets you expand the power grid. A bigger power grid supports more servers.
And the flywheel spins faster.
It's an investment strategy designed to turn a static pile of equipment into an appreciating asset. You're building a diversified income portfolio that just happens to look like a shipping container full of servers.
And you have to forecast this out for 10 years. The coursework mentions P&L modeling that includes carbon credits and even integrating curb car logistics.
Yeah, curb car is the decentralized delivery platform in their ecosystem. So imagine your stack is also a charging hub and a dispatch center for autonomous delivery drones.
The architect has to model all of that revenue.
All of it. It's not just keeping the lights on, it's keeping the ledger black.
It's incredibly comprehensive. But, and this is the big pivot, you can have the perfect thermal loop, the perfect financial model, and it can all be destroyed in 5 minutes if the people around you just hate it.
Which brings us to at number 3, the town mayor.
Module 4, governance and human systems. This is the part that usually gets ignored in tech certification.
Oh, completely. Usually the instruction is just configure the router, close the ticket, don't talk to the user.
Right.
But Deriticular is being very realistic here.
Yeah.
If you are the person controlling the power, the internet, and maybe the water filtration for a remote village, you are not just a service provider.
You are a localized government.
Whether you want to be or not.
Yeah.
They call it drafting a digital constitution.
That's a great term for it.
It's a recognition of the power dynamics. So let's say you have cameras on the perimeter of your site for security. Who has the right to see that footage?
If a crime happens in town, can the local police demand access?
Or is it encrypted? Or what about medical records? If your local cloud is hosting the village clinic's database, who owns that data? The architect has to write the terms of service.
And it goes beyond just rules. It's about stakeholder diplomacy.
Exactly. The syllabus talks about navigating local municipal councils and even tribal elders, depending on where you deploy. You can't just drop a high-tech fortress into a community and expect it to survive.
It mentions social license to operate.
Right. If the locals feel like you're just extracting value from them, using their land, making noise, and keeping all the Bitcoin, they will eventually cut your fiber cables. It becomes a physical security risk.
So how does the architect solve that? How do you make them like the fortress?
Through cooperative structures and tokenomics. The course teaches you how to structure the business so that the neighbors can actually buy in.
Literally buy equity in the stack.
Yes. So instead of paying a bill to some faceless utility, the community owns a fraction of the infrastructure. If the stack creates a profit from that spark spread we talked about,
the neighbors get a dividend.
Yes. That changes the dynamic completely. You aren't the man anymore. You're a partner. They want you to succeed because your profit is their profit.
It's decentralized utility ownership.
But look how much responsibility that puts on the architect. You aren't just calculating voltage. You're designing the economic equity split for 100 people. You are the treasurer.
It's wild. But we should also talk about the physical aspect of this fortress concept, because before you get to the handshake deals, you actually have to build the site.
Right. Module 2, spatial design and security. This is where the architect plays general contractor. And they use a zero trust layout philosophy.
Which is a cybersecurity term, usually. Trust no one.
Here, it's applied to physical space. The syllabus teaches you to zone the site into these concentric rings.
Okay, so zone 1 is public access.
Right. This is your storefront. Oh. Wi-Fi kiosks, EV charging docks, maybe a package locker. It's porous. Anyone can walk in, charge their phone, buy a coffee.
Then you go deeper. Zone 2, operational access.
This is for employees and authorized personnel. This is where the messy work happens. Sorting the biomass feedstock, maintaining the battery arrays. You need a badge to get in here.
And finally, zone 3, the vault.
The vault. This is where the Rios core servers and the Agra control unit live. And the syllabus is strict on this. Biometric access only.
Okay.
This is the brain of the organism. You do not let the mayor, the neighbors, or even the investors in there.
It really paints a picture of a facility that is, yeah, half community center, half bank vault.
And the placement matters too. You have to analyze solar insulation, how much sun hits the dirt, and also RF line of sight.
For the mesh network.
Right. If you're building a mesh network to provide internet to the town, your antennas need to physically see the client nodes. You have to survey the land.
Okay, so you've learned the physics, the finance, the politics, the construction. You've put in the 30 hours. How do they actually test you? Because a multiple choice quiz seems,
insufficient.
Wildly insufficient for designing a civilization.
Oh, there is no multiple choice quiz.
Hmm?
Module 5 is the capstone defense. And frankly, it sounds terrifying.
It's a simulation.
It's a full scenario.
Yeah.
The syllabus says you receive the prompt.
Yeah.
You are hired to design a sovereign stack for a specific real-world location.
So it could be like a disaster relief camp in Haiti after a hurricane.
Or a remote mining town in Western Australia. Or a co-op farm in Vermont.
Yeah.
And you have to produce the full blueprint.
Everything.
Everything. A master site plan, a bill of materials down to every bolt and server blade, and that 10-year economic forecast showing the ROI. But here's the kicker.
Okay.
You have to present it live.
To who? The instructors?
No. You present it via their Remnant interface. Mm-hmm. To a panel of AI agents.
Wait, AI agents?
Yes. They simulate the stakeholders. One agent might play the role of a skeptical venture capitalist who thinks your spark spread math is wrong.
And another one's an angry mayor who thinks you're violating zoning laws.
Exactly. You have to argue your case and win them over in real time.
That is incredibly high pressure. It tests your diplomacy as much as your engineering.
And that's just the oral board? There's also the blackout drill?
I saw this in the notes. This is the practical exam.
They drop you into a simulator where the main grid has failed and the internet uplink is severed. You have, say, 30 minutes of battery life left.
And you have to reboot the system.
You have to virtually reboot the aggregator using only the local biomass available in the simulation and stabilize the Rios cluster before the power dies.
It's a stress test. They want to see if you panic when the lights go out.
If you can't handle the adrenaline of a blackout, you really shouldn't be holding the keys to the city.
Fair point. But let's say you survive. You beat the AI, you survive the blackout, you get the black badge.
The golden black NFT badge. It signifies master status in the Deerticular ecosystem.
Yeah.
But there's a very tangible financial perk that comes with it.
Dealer privileges.
Exactly.
I did the math on this and it's kind of shocking.
It's significant. SSA holders get 5 to 10% wholesale discounts on all certified hardware.
The course costs $2,499. But if you are building a full stack, buying aggregators, Starlink kits, racks of servers, that project could easily be $50,000 or $100,000.
Right. And a 10% discount on a $30,000 hardware buy is $3,000. You have paid for the course on your very first job.
That is a very smart value proposition. It effectively makes the training free for professionals.
But remember the prerequisites. We mentioned this at the top, but they were serious about it. You can't just walk in off the street.
Right. You need the CRA certification. That's mandatory.
And they highly recommend the SBT or a professional engineering license.
Mm-hmm.
They're filtering for people who already know the basics. They want full stack sovereigns.
Yeah.
You know, stepping back from all the details, this curriculum, it paints a very specific picture of where the world might be going.
It really does. It suggests a future where centralization is failing, or at least where reliance on it is a liability.
Right. It's not just about going green. It's about resilience. It's about redundancy.
Deerticular is betting that the future belongs to these decentralized nodes. They're basically telling you the national grid might brown out, the global supply chain might break, but if you have an architect and you have a stack, your town stays on.
Waste becomes power. Power becomes data. Data becomes wealth. It's a compelling loop. It feels almost inevitable.
It makes a lot of sense. But I do want to leave the listener with a slightly uncomfortable thought.
Okay, exactly.
We talked about the town mayor hat. We talked about the architect writing the constitution and deciding who gets the dividend check.
Yeah, the governance part.
Well, if you are the person who designs the power grid and you control the internet access and you hold the encryption keys and you wrote the town charter, you aren't just a technician anymore.
You are a governor.
You are effectively a governor. That's true. In a small, closed system, the architect is king.
Wow.
This certification creates a class of people who possess an immense amount of leverage over the communities they serve. We're talking about the rise of the technocrat in the most literal sense of the word.
Are we ready for a future where infrastructure architects hold that much political power?
That is the question. You sign up to learn about cooling loops and spreadsheets.
And you end up running a civilization.
Or at least blueprinting one.
Blueprinting one. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into the sovereign systems architect. I'm going to go look at my own stack at home, which currently consists of a flickering router and a fuse box I'm afraid to touch and realize how much work I have to do.
You and me both.
Thanks for listening. Think about your own blueprints, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.